Hello and welcome to Criterion
Close Up.
I'm Mark Herney, and I'm here with Aaron West. Aaron, good to see you and talk to you again, as always. How are you?
Hello again, Mr. Mark. I'm great. Just as good as always.
Just ducky.
Nice.
Excellent. Ducky. And we want to, this is a special episode, Criterion Close Up, and this is where we get close up with Michelle Rosenthal. Welcome, Michelle.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for coming on from the Criterion Affection blog and various other platforms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all over the internet.
I love it. You know, you have a really big and wonderful footprint. I was checking it out. So, yeah, we're gonna be getting into really Michelle and her art on this episode. We'll also be talking about her Criterion connection and some other, you know, what she's been thinking about Criterion lately, some of her favorites. So really an artistic episode. So really cool to have you on, Michelle.
Oh, I'm very excited. I've been looking forward to it.
And excellent. We should mention excellent. Criterion Blogathon winner.
That's
yeah,
right.
I still feel like almost guilty about that. I don't know.
No.
I very much appreciate it.
She won the award for most original, which really everything she does is super original. I mean, it's unlike anything.
That's why I feel like I cheated.
I know, but still, it counts. So, we're thrilled to have you. Of course, we've been talking, a couple years now, I think, close to it.
Ever since I was aware of you, yeah.
Likewise.
I'm bad at keeping up with the Criterion sphere online, so I think you reached out first, and thank you for doing so.
I think I did, yeah.
Cool. Oh, that's great. Wonderful, wonderful covers. We'll definitely include some links to some of your artwork in the show notes, and we'll embed some pictures, so awesome, Michelle. The first thing we wanted to ask you, though, of course, because you are a first-time guest, is your Criterion connection. How did you become aware of Criterion?
So I feel like my Criterion connection is maybe a little backwards for most people because I was kind of into Criterion first and then into film after. Like, it kind of went in the wrong direction. But I like became aware of Criterion in high school, and it was just for the cover art. That's what drew me to Criterion from the start. So I was in high school and I rented from the local library. I rented The Discreet Charm of the Bourgeoisie.
Oh, yeah.
And didn't know anything about Buñuel, didn't know anything about surrealist film. But I just loved the cover so much. And after walking by it five times, I was like, I have to know what this movie is. So I feel like that's the pattern that's repeated since then. I'll just be browsing movies and then come to like a standstill in front of a beautiful cover, and it's been Criterion every time. And then eventually I thought, well, obviously this is the series for me. So I mean the cliche with Criterion being the film school in a box, I feel like I'm the one who's doing that. I feel like I don't come to Criterion with a film background per se. Like, I love film, but I'm no aficionado, but I've definitely been using Criterion as the roadmap, so to speak.
That's right. I just pulled up the cover, and that's the one with the lips with legs and a top hat, which is
in the bowler hat. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just so arresting.
It's very Buñuel, though, if you know Buñuel.
Mm-hmm.
I think
absolutely.
Phantom Liberty, it was also pretty strange, but in a good way.
Oh, that one's so great. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of similar. I wonder if it's the same artist. Would have to look, but
yeah. It might. I don't know the artist for that. That might even be original poster art. I'm not entirely sure.
Sometimes they do that.
Be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Phantom Liberty is a like a Statue of Liberty that looks like a butt bird. So
yes, it's
very creative. A butt bird.
Yeah, and it's holding a very flaccid torch, if I remember.
And if you've seen the movie, you might understand what they're getting at there. So
I haven't seen that one yet, so obviously I have to do that next.
Well, there's one scene that I'm not going to spoil that scene for you. You have to experience it. But you, when you see it, you'll be like, oh, I got it.
I think I can guess.
Nice. Well, you know, one thing we didn't mention, too, I had wanted to, regarding your blog, Michelle, was about how you are watching every Criterion film, and you referred to this, from A to Z. So you've got over 800 to watch. And I think
I'm working on it.
Did you reach 200 yet? I think you were pretty close at one point.
Oh, I'm just under 200. I think I'm at, because I do keep a tally, I believe I'm at 192.
Okay,
and
that's cool.
I say I'm going A to Z. I'm not going alphabetically. There's no rhyme or reason, but
just whatever.
Yes.
When a cover grabs you or something.
Pretty much, yeah. Just whatever I feel like watching next.
And we should mention that our good friend David Blakesley, it seems like we're mentioning David every episode now. But
we are.
He did an interview with you a few years ago for Criterion Cast, an email interview. So, and actually, I think your Criterion connection was in there as well. And I remember, I think Armageddon was mentioned, and I totally understand why you left that off here.
Well, no, the thing is, technically, Armageddon... All right, so I think this is actually different now, because at the time, technically, Armageddon was the first Criterion I had ever seen. But I didn't see it with the knowledge that it was Criterion, so it doesn't really count. But I think now I can say that A Hard Day's Night is the first one that I've ever seen.
Oh, cool.
Because I saw that before Armageddon. So that hadn't been released at the time, but
Hard Day's
now I don't have...
Yeah, that cover is way better than the Armageddon cover.
Yeah, that's true.
The Armageddon cover is just like a little bit of orange, like a fiery text, and I think that's
I had my big Beatles phase in elementary school, so I'm pretty sure Hard Day's Night is now officially the first Criterion I've seen.
Sweet. Well, that has a great cover. So
a recent one too.
Dual format. Last year was it? Last year, or year before? Boy, time flies.
It was pretty recent.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think it was 2000.
It was year before. Yeah, because they toured it. Janis toured it, and then last year they toured Apu was the big one. So yeah, time flies. So
that's right. Yeah.
We have a little housekeeping, short housekeeping. Do you want to take this one, Mark, or should I?
Sure. Go ahead.
Well, we have a little bit of a schedule change. Well, if you heard the Gross Out episode, our listeners should know that our recording for that was about somewhere around 5 hours.
Epic podcasting at its finest.
When I finished editing it, and you know, we signed off, like there was a collective wow and ooh.
I mean, yes.
It was a fun five. It was a blast of 5 hours. But of course, we cut that down and split it into two parts. But that backed us up a little bit. And in fact, you're hearing this now a week after we recorded it. And so we had to trim our schedule a little bit. So we were going to do Lady Snowblood and with a subtopic of Kill Bill, Tarantino's, and kind of how they relate. And so what we're instead going to do is something kind of, we're still going to watch Snowblood, and we've seen Kill Bill probably, you know, a couple times. Maybe a couple dozen for you, Mark. But we're gonna try something new out where we're going to go at it, you know, without notes, without prep, just talk about the movie, and we're probably gonna talk about other stuff too, just whatever floats our fancy. Mark and I, we talk about movies pretty much every day, sometimes every hour. So we're gonna save some of that and for our airwaves, and hopefully people will appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll try to make it interesting. So. We do have some cool stuff to say, so we just don't always share it with listeners. So it'll be different podcast.
It might be totally boring too. We don't, but you know what? It's our podcast. We can do what we want, right? Until people scream at us.
We'll see where it goes.
Right.
Yeah. There's a lot we can talk about, you know. So we'll think about that a little bit. Kind of kick it around like a soccer ball.
There have already been some things I've thought about just floating to you, just in general conversation, that I've held on to because got to save something. So it'll be fun.
Yeah, might even get a little personal. Who knows? Yeah, we'll see.
Speak for yourself, buddy.
So that's upcoming. So we'll look forward to that. And so let's take a quick break, and we're going to come back with some more with Michelle.
And we should mention that the music is "Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence." That's that weird techno-y stuff you're probably hearing right this second. So that was Michelle's pick. That's one of her favorite scores.
This was my weird choice. Yes.
Oh, it's a great choice.
Well, thank you.
Welcome back, everyone, to Criterion Close-Up. I'm Mark Herney here with Aaron West and Michelle Rosenthal. We're going to be talking to Michelle a bit, but before we really dive into that, we wanted to talk about the new releases. There was a new episode of The Newsstand released this week from Criterion Cast, where they talked about that with Scott and Arik and Ryan were on there talking about the June releases. So we just thought we'd chime in a little bit and get some of Michelle's thoughts too.
Yeah.
So look forward to that. And I coming up soon, there's a big one I know is Aaron's is particularly excited about, but June 7th is La Miche from Antonioni. This is spine number 817. What do you think, Aaron? Should we just list all the releases and kind of give some general thoughts?
I think we can go one at a time. I have things to say. Yeah. I haven't seen Le Amiche, or well, it's Italian, so is it Le Amiche?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm saying it French-wise. You know.
I know.
If it's Italian, it's Amiche.
Oh, Amiche, of course. all of our Italian listeners are horrified right now.
It's so
Le Amiche.
It's an early Antonioni, and it precedes Il Grido, which actually we just mentioned last show, because it came up in Cinema Paradiso. And I'm a huge Antonioni fan, and this is one I haven't seen, so I'm just excited to see it. Are you a fan, Michelle?
Yeah, a bit. I haven't seen that much, but yeah, I haven't seen this one. But what I've seen, I've enjoyed.
Yeah, this one was a big surprise. Folks weren't really expecting it. Usually there's all these clues of what's coming from Criterion, but kind of under the radar, other than the fact that Masters of Cinema did release it in the UK. It's been out for a few years, but
yeah. I know the cover was not too well received. It's really just probably a still from the film with five women and a purple scripted script text of the title. But yeah, I think it's fine. It's simple and it probably fits the film.
Yeah, I think it does the trick. It's not show stopping, but I think it's very solid design.
It's not flashy.
Indeed.
Yeah. Although I do like the font is nice. Maybe that would be considered a little more flashy. But I think I remember Scott has seen this, Scott and I, and he reviewed the Masters of Cinema
release.
And he said, the ladies in this film are not that happy as they appear in that picture. So,
well, it's an Antonioni film, so.
Right.
Yeah. Well, And we think of I Knew Her Well, that was a photograph, a stylized photograph, and that one was done very well, I think, with the paper rip, I think it was. I'm not gonna complain about the covers. I love the covers.
Yeah. Can't say much about the film till we see it either, but yeah, looking forward to this one. So how about June 14th? There's a little film. Aaron, I'm just gonna kick it to you because I know you're just chomping at the bit for this one.
I'm not, but probably about I've mentioned it on about 10 podcasts or so of ours. La Chienne. It's been my reason for wanting to see this. I'm a huge Renoir nut. I did a lot of studying of Renoir and in college, and just on my own. And I've seen just about everything of his 30s output, and actually pretty much everything of his American and then later French output. But this one has eluded me because it just hadn't been out in a proper format. But then I think it was 2 years ago, there was a new 4K scan that played Cannes Classics. And, of course, I got all giddy wanting to see the film. And I've had opportunities to see it since, but I wanted to see it in the right format. So now you know, and actually I almost forgot to mention, when I went to Criterion, I requested this one in person. So I'm totally taking credit for this one.
Oh, guys. Of course.
No, it had nothing to do with me. But the big surprise is there's another one, Empouche Bébé. Is that right?
Sounds right. I think you got the Bébé right, at least.
Yeah. That's his 1931 film. That's his first sound film. So that one is also, that's a bonus film on the disc. So there's two films. There's a 90-minute conversation between Renoir and Michel Simon. Speaking of Michel. And it's moderated by Jacques Rivette. So some big names there. And an essay by Jeanette Vincendu, who is one of my favorites. I actually have sourced her in college. So looking forward to reading that. So are you guys interested, or anywhere near as interested as I am?
What do you think, Michelle?
I mean, I'll watch it. I go into a lot of Criterion films totally blind. So
it's a good way to do it.
I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing it, but...
That's a good way, yeah. Are you a Renoir fan, or...?
No expectations. I have not seen that much Renoir. I think I've seen, like, one film in college, maybe. So definitely need to get up to snuff.
Okay, well, I would recommend starting with the two big ones, Grand Illusion and Rules of the Game. Actually, Grand Illusion I would start with first.
Grand Illusion would be the one I saw.
Oh, there you go, okay. Well, so then, Rules of the Game.
I'll set it. Yes, I'll set it. Criterion number one.
Or Baudu Saved from Drowning is probably not his best, but it's pretty accessible. So they remade that into Down and Out in Beverly Hills. So
okay.
Hmm. Yeah, The River is another good one.
Yeah, that's a great one. Yeah,
very very colorful.
Yeah,
just gorgeous.
Also came upgrade last year.
Yeah. I'm taking notes.
Yeah. I probably, Boodoo Save from Drowning. It's funny, Aaron's mentioning all the ones I have seen, and I do, that one's great, and I like Rules of the Game, of course, is awesome. But I love that this has an introduction from Renoir. He's very engaging, so this will be, it's a really good addition to this.
Yeah, it's probably from the same series that all the other ones are for. I kind of have a feeling that he was just sitting in a cafe recording intros to all his films. I mean, that's probably it, because they all look the same. But they're all terrific. Yep. So, some range from like 2 minutes to 20, I think.
And this one, I wasn't sure, Aaron, if you'd seen this. You said you hadn't. Just curious about the cover from Blitch, I believe it is. Very evocative cover, yeah. Especially, you know, based on the still that's listed on the Criterion site too.
Yeah, it's very stylized. And Michelle, maybe you can does it look like it's kind of like a watercolor or a sketch?
No, it looks like pencil to me. It might be charcoal in there, but it looks like pencil.
Yeah, I think it's exceptional. What do you think?
Yeah, it's really lovely, and I had to look up this artist, and apparently it's a very well-known French comic artist who I did not know.
Right, yeah.
His Wikipedia page is a French Wikipedia page, so I get the impression that it's, someone very just established in France, and I do kind of love that Criterion will do that a lot. They'll go to that country to find the artist, or they'll really find the artist that has some sort of connection to the film, not just stylistically, but in some other way. So I think it's definitely a lovely image.
And we probably shouldn't call him Blutch. He probably wouldn't like that. Blush, I'm guessing.
I'm something guessing like too.
That. Something in that department. Guillaume is going to crucify us regardless. That's a listener. Who critiques our terrible pronunciation, although Mark does pretty well.
As he should.
Yeah.
As he should. Well, I can't get Italian right, but I'm getting French down, so.
Yeah, right.
So June 14th, we're getting Here Comes Mr. Jordan from Alexander Hall. It's spine number 819. And this one stood out to us, of course. Very excited to see a new cover from Caitlin Kuwald, who we had a really nice conversation with on episode 24. So it was nice to see her emerging again with a cover. I think her first probably since The Organizer, if I'm
Yeah, statement, well, right? Or Zatoichi, I believe.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
because she worked on that. Yeah, and although you know, with the organizer, you might remember that she mentioned that she wanted to draw their faces, or you know, Mastroianni's face, you know, but she ended up drawing the back of his head. And right. It's funny that happened again here, that she drew two heads from, well, one's turned to the side. I guess they're both turned to the side, but you know, in profile sort of. But she always does tremendous work. So I just love the colors too. Looking forward to seeing it, and I don't know. Have to reach out to Caitlin and see what she thought of it.
Yeah, yeah, very very curious. I think isn't that Heaven Can Wait is one that she. Did the cover for too? Yep, the DVD,
the earlier one, right? And and I seem to remember she wasn't thrilled with her early work, so she probably, right. I'm guessing she relished the opportunity to kind of correct it. Even though it's not exactly the same title, it's close, and I see why they thought of her too.
Yeah, she does a great job with People and Faces. It's really cool.
And Michelle, I know you're an illustrator. Are you a Caitlin fan?
Absolutely. I mean, I loved hearing the interview with her, not just for the insight into how Criterion works with illustrations, which was really great, but also I just love hearing people talk about illustration. It was really nice to hear her talk about her process and how she works with the art directors there. And it was really great to hear that. And her work is just always fantastic. She definitely, I mean, obviously definitely has a way with faces, and I just really like her painting style as well. It's realistic but a little flat. It's nice in between there.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah. And what's funny is she had prepared so much for the for our discussion, and Mark and I had no idea. Well, we also had some audio problems. I was deaf for the episode, which I can tell when I listen back. But hopefully, I think a couple other people have mentioned that I sound a little off. But at some point, we want to get her back and get more into the process, her process, and talk some shop. So, and of course, we'll talk some shop with you too, Michelle.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
She had also listed, I mean, she redid her top 10 Criterion, and she'd also listed a number of other covers she liked and a number of other artists she liked. And she posted a picture to her Instagram with all her notes for the interview. And I think we got to like a third of them because we didn't know she'd done that much. So that was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, Caitlin was awesome.
So how about we move into the June 21st, we're getting, I guess technically this is the third animated film in the collection, so some more art, Fantastic Planet from René Laloux, spine number 820. So very cool to see this. This one actually won an award at Cannes in 1973, considered a countercultural classic. Compelling statement against conformity and violence. I was reading that from the Criterion site. Just interesting to see, you know, really their take on the film. I have seen this one. This one is available from the Masters of Cinema also, kind of a Masters of Cinema month this month. Mm-hmm. It's been out there for a while, and probably going to hang on to my copy of that because I do believe it includes some additional short films, but this one has a 4K transfer. One of the short films, Les Escargots, and documentary.
Terrible, Mark. One. Terrible.
Yeah, yeah. I got to work on that.
This is our worst French episode yet.
Yeah, actually, I think you got it right. I think you actually got it more or less right.
I was teasing there. So there'll be more French to come, too.
And this one's a cover from Eric Skillman. So, yeah, this one. Have either of you seen this, Fantastic Planet?
This one I have seen.
I haven't, so cool. All right. I hear that this is the one, if you're going to take drugs and watch a Criterion, I hear this is that one.
Yeah, I think so.
I would agree, mostly because there's very little plot to have to follow. It's definitely all in the visuals.
Not that I'm condoning any illicit activity, but, you know, we'll see how I watch it.
we were planning on doing a 2001 episode on drugs or something like that, but anyway.
Yeah, we'll see.
Maybe we'll do a Fantastic Planet one on drugs.
I did see there was some people complained about this artwork, but apparently it fits within the aesthetic of the film, which I guess you two could speak more
totally
towards.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, I think the art is spot on. I mean, I don't know what can you add to it than the art that's already in the film.
Yeah, it's great. It's very similar to the Masters of Cinema one, if I remember. I think that one is a little bit farther away and kind of a profile shot of the alien there. So the drag, but yeah, I think it's great. It's it looks like it's plucked from the film. I think it looks great.
And Eric Skillman is the art director at Criterion 2, so I'm sure he's extremely talented. But is this a still from the film? This little alien?
I think this is a still from the film. I'm sure he touched it up, but it looks like this might be taken right from the film.
Yeah, it looks like he did touch it up a little bit, I'm guessing.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Certainly could be.
Let us know, Eric.
Yep.
I'm also thinking, now that I'm seeing this, this is the music I should have requested, because this is another one of my favorite soundtracks. I think the music is favorite part of this film. Yeah, well, it's jazzy and weird, yeah.
This music might show up on this episode.
All right.
We might be playing right
now. I'm going to put in those 2 cents right now before I forget.
Yeah,
the listeners are going to know if I found this music, it's playing. So if not, sorry. It's hard to find.
Nice. So, and we're getting, on June 28th, we're actually getting a couple of titles. And I should mention, this is a big month, 6 releases, all new releases. But June 28th, we're getting Dr. Strangelove from Mr. Stanley Kubrick, Spine number 821. So very cool. 4K digital transfer, alternate 5.1 soundtrack, a number of supplements, some of which are on the now out of print Blu-ray from Warner Brothers that I am showing on the screen here.
Nice.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't say Warner Brothers. I get that mixed up with the other Warner Brothers titles. This is a Sony title. So
right, yeah.
Probably one of the reasons that Criterion got rights to it. So
and maybe it will be a Criterion UK title too, because of Sony.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a surprise.
And this one's also from Eric Skillman, the cover, and I think he designed the actually the typography is really interesting, the way it's a bomb from a plane.
Yeah, and it's a direct reference to the titles in the film, the credit titles, are in that same style.
That's right.
I was trying to place it. Thank you, Michelle.
Yeah.
I've only seen it 10 times, and I didn't remember that either.
Well, then I may have seen it about 90 more times than you.
Well, there you go.
It's a fantastic film.
Well, that helps you catch up to the 800.
If only that counted, yeah. If only I could see the same movie 50 times. And
oh, right, yeah.
And that counts as 50 different movies. Yeah, no.
Kind of a big release. I think it'll... Well, what's funny is I already own this twice, and I'm so sick, I'm going to buy it again, too. And actually, I think the release, the Sony out-of-print release has more supplements than this does, doesn't it?
It's pretty close. I mean, it's hard to say because they don't really go into as much detail on the Blu-ray. I would say it's pretty close, and there are a few differences. And, of course, on this one, they do have the new interviews with the scholars and archivists and a few others, too. So cool. I think it'll be a nice companion piece. I'm definitely going to pick it up, too. It's nice to see more Kubrick in the collection, for sure.
Oh, for sure. And I should mention, I said I have it. I own 2 copies. My dad had the Laserdisc, the Criterion, and I watched that as well. So, yeah, lots of strange love connections here.
Yes. So that is Kubrick. And we'll just mention the last one that, unfortunately, we don't have the art to take a look at yet. But June 28th, we're getting Clouds of Sils Maria, the Olivier Assayas film, Spine number 822. Another 2K digital master, surround sound. Looking forward to this one, starring Juliette Binoche, Kristen Stewart, and Chloe Grace Moretz. Quite the cast, quite the film. Either of you seen this one yet? I did get to check this out and liked it quite a bit. I think it was number 6 on my films of 2015.
I did not. I want to.
Well, here you go. You can. I loved it as well. Not for everybody. Actually, I went with my wife, and she didn't like it that much, if maybe at all. I forget. So it's maybe not for everybody. Kristen Stewart, I think, is amazing, and she won a lot of awards for it. It's a little meta.
She's great in it.
About the film industry, and I like how that was handled. Now, as far as the cover art, now, of course, the releases were delayed a day, and this, I'm guessing, is why. But there was a press package which had a blue font, which could turn into the cover, something like the cover art, or maybe not, but might be a placeholder. But I think they're going to probably go all out for this cover. It'll probably sell pretty well.
Yeah, he's definitely, I say us, is a kind of a favorite in the collection. So, yeah, nice to see his latest there.
It does say new cover by Nassim Higson. So I don't know that artist, but
I don't either.
And I'm assuming it's a male, and he, or maybe she, is probably still working on it.
Yeah, it is a he. I did see him on Twitter, but didn't recognize any other of his work. So,
I'm sure it's good.
Yeah. So that's the June releases. We'll be looking forward to those in 3 months. So, let's dive into it some more. We'd like to pick your brain a little bit more, Michelle, about some history, some of your history, some of your preferences, some of your favorites. So, we're going to turn it over to you. And I, really probably the best way to start it is we got your Criterion Connection. And you are an artist, and a lovely one at that.
Yes.
I have to praise your Antichrist picture, especially.
Yes.
And I that's over that possibly earlier, so. The most popular thing I've ever drawn, yeah.
they're so happy. I just love the
the three beggars, yeah. That's the way I remember them.
Yeah.
Nice little furry creatures.
I wanted to do something I wanted to do something that would make Lars von Trier angry, and
I read your
it
review.
Seemed fair. It just seemed fair.
I didn't read your review. Are you a fan?
Oh my God, I hate Lars von Trier.
Well, actually, that's a good follow up.
It's a strong hatred. Yeah.
Well, we had an episode on Antichrist, and we had a big discussion questioning whether he was a misogynist or not, and we actually got some female feedback that said he wasn't. So I'm curious, do you think he is?
I definitely fall on the misogynist side of the road. Yeah, I think. I don't know if he hates women. I think he might just be terrified of women, but I think it shakes out to about the same thing.
He's terrified of the press. I know that. But he hasn't done any movies about the press yet. Maybe that's his next one.
I don't know. He just loves making women suffer, and he just loves making his viewers suffer. And I don't know if there's any reason for that other than him being a sadist. But that's one woman's opinion.
I share that in a number of ways. However, I was taken by Antichrist. I was actually surprised by how much I took to that. But really, his later work, I pretty much have hated all of it. Or not hated, but strongly disliked. Nymphomaniac, I'm not a fan. But anyway, I'm repeating what I said on the Gross episode. So.
Yeah, let's jump into, we of course got off on our Lars von Trier, but just curious about your history with our Michelle. I think you got a pretty early start. Just curious, how you came to it.
I don't know. I don't know if I ever really started with art. Just been drawing since I was a kid, and just kept coming back to it. I like saying that I said in second grade that I wanted to be an illustrator, so I was very focused since then. But of course, it's taken a few turns here and there, and then I ended up back at illustration at the end. So I went to school for illustration. I started in graphic design and switched over to illustration.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to school at Syracuse.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah, they have a great broadcasting program that a lot of our listeners wish we had gone to. Well, no, Mark's okay.
They have a great communications school. They have a really good art school too. It's it's a very traditional program, which is nice. And they definitely treat it like an art school, like not just being in a university.
Cool.
yeah, I had a lovely time there.
Nice.
So do you pretty much sketch your art beforehand, or do you do it all in, like, say, Illustrator, or?
Yeah, so everything ends up in Illustrator. I'm a little bit obsessed with Illustrator and vector art, but yeah, I do sketch everything by hand ahead of time. Mm-hmm. I used to draw everything directly into the computer, and it was really just me being lazy, and I think the art suffered as a result. So I definitely think it turns out better when I draw it by hand to start, and then the computer is just the last step.
So when you draw it by hand, do you scan it in and then kind of trace it in Illustrator?
Yeah, pretty much. I pretty much just scan it and trace it. And then, you know, once it's in Illustrator, you can move things around, resize things, change the color. Mm-hmm. So then it becomes easy to tweak.
Yeah.
So the sketches don't have to be perfect either.
We didn't really get to broach this with Caitlin because I had, because of my audio troubles, but I actually used to have a design firm. And so I used Illustrator, although very, very poorly. I was more of a Photoshop guy, and one of the guys in the firm was a really strong illustrator, although not as strong as yourself or Caitlin or anybody that's designing these covers. But it's a challenge, and it's very time consuming.
So you'll be one of the few people listening to this who'll be impressed when I say I do it all with the pen tool.
Wow.
Start to finish. I know.
Yeah.
That's going to mean something to about three people.
I think you'd be surprised. I'm a little older school, too. I actually also used, before Macromedia was bought by Adobe, I used the Macromedia vector program, but I forget what it's called. I've actually been to Macromedia, which, of course, doesn't exist. This is going back a ways. So, they have a building in San Francisco, and this is an aside, but they had a slide that went from like the fifth down to the second floor, which is
what?
Very,
I want that.
I wanted to work. Well, it's not there anymore. It's Adobe. So, and I think Adobe's in Silicon Valley. So, what other tools
slide.
Or do you use any other tools in your arsenal or?
It's pretty much drawing an Illustrator. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I know Photoshop. I know some other programs, but for most of the straight up vector illustrations, it's drawing by hand and rendering in Illustrator, and that's pretty much it.
Cool. Well, I admire your tenacity. I love Illustrator, but I just remember the time, and I'm sure it takes you a little bit, right?
I like to think I'm faster in Illustrator than most, but yeah, it takes, I mean, it's comparable to doing a painting. A painting takes time as well. So, it all takes time.
That's a good point. Now, I don't want to get too personal, but is graphic design and illustration your profession, or do you have a day job?
It's my day job. I do freelance work. So, illustration work where I can get it, but it mostly shakes out to graphic design work. Okay. I also teach sometimes, so I actually teach Illustrator, Photoshop classes, and I'm just kind of all over the place. Thus is the freelancer's life.
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny that your story is actually very, very similar to Caitlin's, which you may have picked up on when you listened. But she also teaches and also, of course, she freelances for a living. I did look at your clients. Any major clients you work with that you're proud of or major pieces that you've done?
Yeah, let me think. Recently, I've done a bunch of pieces for the website Funny or Die, which is pretty proud of those. if you've ever been to that humor website.
Yes.
Yeah, they always ask me to do really weird things, which I enjoy.
Cool.
Googling can see now. That.
Yeah. Oh, Funny or Die. It's like viral videos. You get to vote if it's funny or not.
If it's funny or not. Yeah.
But they have like Between Two Ferns, Zach Galifianakis, and little viral videos occasional. I think that was up there. So,
and let's see, I'm trying.
Will Ferrell owns it, I think, doesn't he?
Will Ferrell does own it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so they've asked me to do a bunch of very strange things. I had a comic come out in an anthology that was put out by Microsoft recently. So that was that was another exciting one. I just did the art for it. I didn't actually write it. Another comic artist actually wrote it. And yeah, Microsoft put out a free sci-fi anthology, which you can download for free.
Wow. Okay. So well, you'll have to send,
do that.
Send us that link and we'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, I will do.
Just go back to Funny or Die. I should mention that Will Ferrell has asked a lot of people to do very strange things. you probably have not met Mr. Ferrell, have you?
No, not personally. I haven't actually been in those offices yet. but, you know, we're basically best friends.
Oh, yeah.
Best buds. I see something on here listed as a House of Tampons, so I can just imagine what that is. So. Interesting.
Yeah, I want to tell you the thing that I'm, one of the projects I did, but I don't know, did you say we are uncensored now?
yeah. Go ahead.
Sure.
Okay, so this is probably the thing I did for them that got the most attention was when there was all the headlines around the Confederate flag being flown over certain states.
Yeah.
They had me draw a new Confederate flag, which featured Robert E. Lee fucking his horse.
Wow.
So that is something that I once got paid money to draw. Yes.
Wow.
Interesting. Wow. Okay. Well, rather than getting paid money to, never mind.
Yeah. Well, better than some things. Yeah.
What's interesting is I live in Redneck Central in Ground Zero for the Confederate flag, and and we just down the street we had a big deal last year with the Confederate flag coming down. I wasn't there, but my wife was, and that was pretty cool, actually. So there was no Robert E. Lee or no sexual activity going on that I'm aware of.
It's
no,
funny,
we
just covered that in The Beast, too, the Borowczyk film, and the Girl Set episode. So it's interesting how horses keep coming back on. The, thanks, Michelle.
Yeah, well, they you're welcome. They did actually print it out, and I think they gave it away to someone who donated money or something. So they used it as a fundraiser. But it's a real flag that someone owns.
I might have to print out a few copies and put them downtown over by the...
you might.
I would get in a lot of trouble
idea.
For that. That would
just
go
see, over. See what the reaction is, you know.
Yeah, the reaction was not so hot from a lot of people. So, you know.
I'm sure.
Don't get me started on that racism in this country. But anyway...
So why don't we let's transition a little bit into just curious about your drawing for Criterion, Michelle. So, you know, we heard about your Criterion connection and maybe it really just stems from that. But, you know, really what prompted you to really delve into the Criterion collection? You're going to watch everything and you draw about the film and you also, you know, write about the film. So how did that all come about?
So this is sort of a continuation of my Criterion connection. how it really came about is, I just have a bit of an obsessive personality.
you're in good company.
I
mean, I assumed as much. But yeah, basically, I've never met a checklist that I didn't like. So the fact that Criterion numbers their films, that just spells disaster for me. So I don't remember when I made the decision to watch every film, but that was just something that I was going around telling people for years. Like, people would recommend a film or say, hey, do you want to watch this? And I'd say, oh, well, it's Criterion. I have to watch it. It's something I have to watch before I die, so I might as well watch it now. So I just had in my head that I had to watch every single film and then that it would take my entire life. And then the blog started because basically because I got laid off, which is, you know, the start of so many beautiful things.
It happened to me. And actually, I mentioned the design firm. Hey, that's how I started mine. So
exactly.
Thank you, corporate America.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you to the company that laid me off. That's when I started freelancing. And that's when I started the blog because, you know, no better time to start a personal project. And it really started just because I wanted to draw a picture for In the Mood for Love. That was the first one that I posted. And
that was the dresses, right?
Yeah, I was just so in love. I was just so in love with the outfits in that film and just the entire art direction. And, you know, every now and then I would draw an illustration for a movie that I liked. And then it was actually a friend of mine who recommended that I turn it into a project, a friend who already knew that I had this obsessive Criterion goal. And it just went on from there. And it's been going for a little over 6 years now.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, that's a long time.
That's great.
Yeah, it's too long.
It's probably a great way to kind of, hone your chops too, you know, as I guess, what was it, Gladwell's 10,000 hours thing? You know, that's...
Oh, exactly.
Probably
yeah.
Half of that is Criterion-inspired pieces. So has it helped you, do you think?
Yeah, well, I think it has. It is really great for that. And I definitely use it as if I have nothing on my plate and I just want to do an illustration for myself. You know, I don't have to reach too far to figure out what I should do an illustration of. I just kind of always have this project. And it's just a great source of inspiration to, you know, have so many different genres and styles of films and try to interpret them. And then, you know, it's also a chance to maybe try out a style that I don't usually work in a bit, branch out a little bit.
Yeah.
But mostly I look through I look through and I don't know if it's obvious to anyone else, but I can see how my style has changed over the years. For me, it's definitely like a personal diary of how my illustrations changed.
That's cool. Yeah, 6 years too. I mean, kudos to you for keeping the project that long. I mean, so many people, they start something and, you know, it maybe goes a year, a couple years, but yeah, it's great that you're, you know, so dedicated to it.
I mean, I have to see everything through to the end. It's a disease.
That obsessive personality.
It's going to be a long-term one.
Oh, yes.
But I guess what's cool is you're on our side of the fence for at least a while. I really like your head drawing that you did, I think, a month or two ago, where you merged the four, and it kind of captured the psychedelic look of the film, and also, you know, it's the monkeys. that's an interesting.
Yeah.
So do you just take it up when you get inspired by the film? I know you can't do all of them.
Pretty much, yeah. I don't have the time to draw all of them. Usually, if I've seen a film recently and I particularly enjoyed it, usually I want to draw it. I saw Head and I just really loved it and I wanted to draw it. And Head actually led into an entire monkeys obsession that lasted that lasted a month. So I actually like burned through the entire TV show and just went all out with the monkeys. I usually draw just whatever I've seen recently. There's a bunch that I've drawn recently that I keep thinking, oh, I should draw that one, and I haven't gotten around to it yet, so we'll see.
Okay, so Mickey Dolenz or Davy Jones or Peter Tork?
Or Mike Nesmith. I'm going to go with the last one you said. I'm going to go with Mike Nesmith.
Hell yeah, yeah. Nesmith is definitely the most creative, and actually there's another connection with our show with Alex Cox, who financed...
Yes, oh my God, I heard that story, and that was hilarious. That was a great story.
Yeah, Nesmith seems like quite a guy, quite a creative guy.
And really.
He was probably, I think, the creative brains behind that, and of course Ravelson as well. So yeah, I just saw Head probably about 4 or 5 months ago, and for the first time. It's something.
Yeah. I mean, it's a nonsense film, but I don't know. It's fun. I feel like it's it's just fun enough to not seem like a dated 60s art film. You know, it's still got those like just super goofy monkeys elements that I feel like save it from being too pretentious. I don't know.
That's a good observation. Yeah. And when we were talking about Buñuel too, it kind of, you know, Buñuel meets Rafelson, kind of, it's a little bit in between. It's still a comedy, but
yeah,
almost as weird. Maybe just as weird. I don't know.
I definitely like the weird films that don't take themselves too seriously. I always like a little bit of tongue in cheek.
Cool.
Why I don't like Lars von Trier. I don't know.
he's a little intense.
Cheek there.
Because for someone who takes himself seriously, yeah.
A lot of tongue, no cheek.
Exactly.
I mean, speaking of releases, Michelle, any other favorite Criterion releases that you have, whether it's the movie, the package, the artwork, anything else that really bubbles up to the top for you?
That's so broad.
It's a big question.
Yeah,
really. I don't know if I have favorite covers because I feel like they're all just across the board too perfect.
They're good.
Yeah, I think almost every single cover just does what it's supposed to do. Maybe there have been a handful that I haven't been crazy about, but I don't know if I have favorite covers. For favorite Criterion films, I usually think of it in two categories. I usually think of films that were already favorite films that Criterion happened to release.
Sure.
Like A Hard Day's Night or like Doctor Strangelove, like or Royal Tenenbaums is another favorite.
I liked your drawing of that too.
Thank you. That one was a little daunting because his films already have, like, his brother does all the illustrations for them, and they already have this great iconic illustration style, and I'm like, oh, what am I going to add to that? So that was a good challenge.
I like that you put a lot into it, but it wasn't, you know, busy. You know, it was actually just right, but it really did capture the feel. So maybe Wes will call you. Maybe not, since
we'll
his brother.
See. No, I missed the deadline. I think there was a book of Royal Tenenbaum's fan art, or like Wes Anderson fan art, that came out like just before I did that or something.
Oh,
so
cool.
I've already missed the boat.
Those Matt Stoller-Zeitz books are really good, though. Did I get the name right?
Yeah,
he does all the Wes Anderson books anyway.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Maybe volume two you can make it for, Michelle.
There you go.
Yeah.
But then I definitely have the favorite films that are favorites because of Criterion, the films that I would not have watched otherwise. Yeah,
the discoveries, sure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The discoveries. So for those, I usually think about Eyes Without a Face is an absolute favorite.
Oh, yeah.
It's so gorgeous and weird and disturbing.
Another great illustration of yours. I saw that one. It's another favorite.
That's good.
Yeah, that one turned out well. But again, I feel like it's just because I just had a great movie to work off of. Like, I feel like they just fed me the visuals for that one. I loved Close Up, the film that you were named after.
Namesake.
Which I haven't seen. one day.
I can't recommend it enough. I was like head over heels in love with that when I saw it.
I think I'm obligated. I'm actually a huge Kiarostami fan. I just haven't gotten around to that one, but I've seen, I think, the majority of his bigger releases, and I guess we're going to get the Coker trilogy hopefully someday. I've seen, I think, one or two out of those three, but anyway.
I mean, and if you like films that take a meta look on film, that is the one.
So meta, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, very much so.
Certified Copy yet, or?
I watched Certified Copy, but I didn't draw it. I actually had a vague idea of what I was going to draw, and then it didn't happen.
You have so much time.
Events got in the way. Yeah, so maybe I'll come back to it. Who knows?
No pressure.
And then I'll throw in one last favorite. Yeah. Because it's related to a new release. Summer Hours was one of my favorites as well.
Good one.
Oh, yeah.
Which I actually just rewatched. And I had a lot of feelings about that movie.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Movie about the process of dying. So,
it's also a film about objects, and specifically art objects, and I don't know, so someone who cares about art objects, I've never seen a movie that's about the importance of things before. Like, the movie's about the furniture and the art collection. Obviously, as stand-ins for a lot of different things, but I just really love it.
Mm-hmm. And actually, the cover is very nice too. I think I don't have it in front of me. I think that was a still from the film, if I remember.
It's a photograph. It's just like very dreamy, if I recall.
Oh, actually, no. I pulled it up. No, it's not a still from a film. It might be derived from the still of its flowers, but it is very pleasant. Yeah, and actually, even though I know it's about, you know, the process, it's kind of in a way uplifting. You know, I think.
I don't think it's maybe a little melancholy, but I don't think it's depressing.
No.
I think it's just a really sweet film.
It made me think about you're talking about the artwork, Michelle. I just thought of it, you know, how with these Criterion movies that we collect, it's another kind of art collection, right? So what's going to happen to it when when we pass, right? Are our kids going to pass it on or what?
I feel for whoever. And
yeah.
No, absolutely, because it's, you know, a lot of the film is about you know, these are, like, if you're talking about a Criterion collection, you know, they're important films in their own right. And, you know, they have, like, a market value and they have a cultural value. But there are the films in your collection that are going to mean a lot just to you for a really specific personal reason. And
sentimental value, right?
Yeah, and that's not something you can pass on. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's why I have not sold my Third Man or anything like that. Well, I just got my Third Man last year, but still, it costs too much to sell it. Well, Michelle, do you have any of your own drawings, Criterion or otherwise, that are your favorites that really, you know, you're really proud of?
Actually, I think I'm going to give the same answer that Caitlin gave when she was on here.
Oh, cool.
If I recall, which is that the most recent things that I've done are my favorite. Because
that's right. Oh, okay.
Once it gets too old, I don't want to look at it anymore. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So whatever I've done in the past few months, those are my favorites, you can assume.
Okay. So ahead. There you go. And for Caitlin, it would be Here Comes Mr. Jordan.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Some of the older ones, like... I don't know. Eyes Without a Face, I'm still pretty happy with. Maybe some of Antichrist, I'm still very happy with.
That's great, yeah.
I wouldn't change a thing.
I like that you bring your own interpretation to the film, too. It's not just, you know, of course, Criterion art, and, you know, there are a lot of hobbyists that do fake covers and stuff, and some of them are exceptional, but some of them are just really just trying to mimic what the cover artists are doing, whereas you're putting your own spin on it too. I think that's a very creative.
I try to not just illustrate what the film looks like. I try to say something with the illustration. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. sometimes the whole high concept idea I have in my head does not actually translate when I actually go to draw it. But there's usually some sort of decision making process in there.
Well, three fluffy animals, that worked out very well.
Yes.
For Antichrist.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen Antichrist, you won't get that. But it's awesome.
Yes.
I might quote myself because I think the last sentence in the Antichrist review says, I wasn't going to do an illustration for this, but hey, let's draw some cute animals. So I'm pretty sure that was my thought process for Antichrist. Yes.
Yeah, that's perfect. Disney's interpretation of Antichrist.
Yeah.
Well,
coming out next year.
Since I know you, of course, you love Strangelove, and that came, your wish came true there. Are there any other films that you love that you'd love to see Criterion release?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't usually have much of a wish list because, as I said, like most of Criterion, I come to blind, so I don't really have the full encyclopedia knowledge of film going into it of things that I want to see. And then there are the things like Dr. Strangelove where I didn't think they were going to release that. I assumed that was going to be way too big and popular a title for them to get their hands on.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah. And I don't know. I was like really happy when they released Hard Day's Night and again, also surprised that they got Hard Day's Night.
Mm-hmm. They are getting
bigger.
Yeah,
I'll take more Beatles
titles.
Movies. Yeah, let's see more Beatles.
Yeah, how about Help? Since they did Head, you? And and now Fantastic Planet. You know, Head has a more of a, I guess, chemically induced. Actually, I think they were all blitzed when they filmed them. Well, I think they were all blitzed all the time. But
I mean, sure, yeah, it goes without saying. I would love, well, I definitely love more animated films. I would love, you know what I would really love is, I want to see them put out one more music video collection.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Like the Beastie Boys,
they did the Beastie Boys,
like
yeah.
Like the Beastie Boys.
Or
yeah,
they could,
that would
could
be
do
great.
Like Michelle Gondry or Spike Jones or, you know, or.
Sure, yeah.
Maybe or Venture.
I'm sure those. Bjork music videos, you know? I'm sure.
My wife hates Bjork. That might be the end of my completionist. No, I'm kidding. She would tell me. She would just be at
school.
You
could watch it on mute.
Lars von Trier connection. Maybe we'll get Dancer in the Dark. You never know.
There you go.
Oh, actually. Yeah. There you go.
That's out of print, I think. So that'd be cool.
Speaking of suffering females, I don't know if that would be
really.
On Michelle's wish list.
I've seen it. I don't need to see it again.
Yeah. Me too. Well, was it last year or the year before, Michelle? What you did was, I think it was through Society 6 or Society 9.
It's Society 6, yeah.
You did a sale of all your prints, and I know it was a one-time thing, and it was, I think, for maybe a week or two or maybe a month. I purchased something from there, and actually, in hindsight, I wish I had purchased more. Are you ever going to do that again, or was that...
I'm going to do that in another 4 years.
Oh, okay.
Perfect.
Yeah, no,
I'll
so
set my,
for the 5-year...
reminder on my iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah, so for the 5-year anniversary, I made everything I've ever done on the blog available as a print. And so I kind of have complicated thoughts around making money off of fan art. I'm like very, very supportive of fan art. Obviously, I'm doing a lot of it, but I always feel a little weird about actually selling it, which I don't know. I've had a lot of people tell me I'm crazy, that I don't need to stress, that I don't need to stress so much about it, but I don't know. So I don't want to make it a regular thing that I'm always selling things on the blog as part of it. But I'm sure the sale will come back again, maybe in another 4 years when I hit my 10-year anniversary.
Yeah,
there you go.
Maybe it'll happen before then. Who knows?
I'd love to buy a copy of House, your House print at some point. So stick that on my wall.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Actually, I think a friend of mine bought that one for me.
and nice. Can I ask, did you do pretty well? I mean, did you get a lot of response from that?
I got a handful. I don't know. I don't think I have the quite the reach, or maybe slightly less reach than I do now. So I definitely got a bunch of people. Oh, thank you.
And if you want, you could just give them all for free. I'd be cool with that.
Oh, there you go.
Is the process pretty difficult? Because you have these all on your computer, probably archived. So do you just have to send them to the print shop one by one, or?
Oh, no, it's really easy. I mean, that's why I did on Society 6, because they do all the printing and shipping for you.
Oh, cool.
Oh, nice.
So all I did was upload the files, yeah. Yeah, okay. that end of it was pretty easy.
The Mon Oncle thing, and actually I mentioned that my wife didn't like something, but loves that film, and, mm-hmm. You know, the fish fountain mm-hmm. and everything. So that I got that because
I
she loved it.
Too.
And I didn't tell her. It was a surprise. And and she didn't know you, Michelle. I think she has an idea who you are now, and especially now. But she loved it. And we have it downstairs at a very prominent place. So thank you for the last 5-year sale.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for getting something. Yeah. Makes me happy to know that my art is on your wall.
Yeah. It makes me happy, too, and my wife. So you helped our marriage. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right. Well, we'll have links to the show notes for everything of Michelle's. You have your personal site. You have Criterion Affection, which actually already has a link mm-hmm. on my on CriterionCloseUp.com.
Yes, it does.
On the sidebar there, if you want to look for it. And there's other Criterion sites as well. And where can we find? You're on Twitter or Facebook, or where are you at?
I am on everything, because you have to be when you freelance. So yeah,
right.
I'm on
Tumblr.
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter, Tumblr, you name it. Yeah, on Twitter and Tumblr, I am Dial M for Michelle. So
nice.
Little film nod in there.
Nice.
Also
Hitchcock
to Michelle.
Yeah, not in
yes.
the collection.
No. Nope.
Yeah, let's see more Hitchcock.
Yeah, that's happening.
So that's Michelle with one L. Dial M for Michelle with one L.
You probably get sick of that, don't you?
it bothered me a lot more when I was younger.
That's okay. My name's Aaron, and I get E-R-I-N, because it's Aaron West, it's,
sure.
I get Adam for the Batman.
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, she's a good yeah. follow, and actually, I don't follow your Tumblr, but I'll have to rectify that. I just started my own that I think has 2 followers, so but I don't really use it that much.
Well, any other sites to
other.
I know you do have a large footprint. Any other sites to
yeah
promote?
I mean, if you just go to michellerosenthal.com, it's all there. I guess Perfect. I can mention my one other blog project, which is unrelated to this one, but the other sort of never-ending, ongoing thing I signed myself up for is I've been doing portraits of important historical queer people, like before the 20th century.
I saw that. Yeah, that's
very,
very
cool.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the website? Web address of that?
So that's on Tumblr. That's queersinhistory.tumblr.com.
Okay, cool. We'll link to everything, but yeah, I think that's fascinating.
So. I'll give you 50,000 links, sure.
That's fine. So, and big question is, and you actually answered this on David's interview, but I'm going to ask you again, if Criterion comes calling and asks you to do, I don't know, Dial M for Murder or...
if Criterion comes to me and asks me to draw like a little icon that's going to go in a tiny corner of one of their liner notes, yes, I will do it.
Okay.
No, I've definitely joked before that my blog has now been a 6-year interview process with Criterion. So
nice.
I'm waiting for that phone call. Yeah, any day now.
Well, Criterion, if you're listening, hire her. I'm sure you have. That is one thing, and Caitlin pointed this out too. Criterion is really, really supportive of illustrators, and so I personally think you'd be a great fit, and I didn't even
get to gush about how incredible that is that they use illustrators, period, because illustration's not the go-to for graphic design in general these days, and especially when you're talking about film, when you're talking about promoting a medium that is already photograph-based, that they have kind of the vision to not just use a still from the film every time, that they actually go with an illustrated image is actually really incredible. And it's one of the things that's drawn me to them.
Yeah, and I think that actually bolsters their reputation too. They could just get a still image, put a little filter on it in Photoshop, and there you go. A lot of studios do that. And But Criterion does have
It's the obvious choice. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It seems like a collaborative effort too. You know, between Criterion and their artist about how it's going to render, and you know, you get some input. So it's nice to see that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Caitlin,
they definitely
about
respect
that.
Their artists. Yeah. Yeah.
And sounds like Eric's a great guy to work with. So, hope you get that call, Michelle.
Thank you.
If I talk to them, I will.
I'm waiting by the phone.
I will pass that along. Not that I plan to talk to or will get to talk to them anytime soon. You never know.
Never know.
Well, it's great talking to you, Michelle. You're awesome. And I really, really love your work. So,
Thank you so much for having me. Have me anytime.
Maybe someday you could come back and talk about a title if there's anything that really drives you nuts. So, good way or a bad way, we can do another Antichrist podcast with you.
Oh, geez, yeah. If you want to hear me ranting for an hour, sure, that would invite me onto that one.
That would be explicit. I'm sure
it might be
more explicit than probably people would expect. So.
Yeah. Thanks so much for joining us, Michelle. And we just want to let folks know where to find the show. You can find us on Twitter at CriterionCU, CriterionCloseUp.com, and Facebook at CriterionCloseUp. And Aaron, where can folks find you?
I'm on Twitter, AWES505, and a couple other places that I'm not going to tell you, because why not?
Find Aaron on Twitter. You can find me, Mark Herney, on Twitter. It's at Mark Herney, H-U-R-N-E, Letterboxd too, of course. And our next episode, as Aaron mentioned, will be our Snowblood, kind of a short take and various ramblings episode, so look forward to that. Mm-hmm. And we'll have Tati closing us out, correct, Aaron? For our music.
Correct. From my purchase from Michelle. So thank you, Michelle, for again adorning my my living room.
Thank you.
Nice. Thanks again, Michelle. And thank you, everyone, for listening to Criterion Close-Up. We'll talk to you soon.